The subject of talk this morning is continuing from earlier talks, simply the application of what we're calling a routine procedure. That isn't routine procedure, that's just a routine procedure. Number of procedures put together to make the process of auditing relatively simple and easy. Now, what's the pattern on which any such procedure would be based? If you know the pattern, why, you would know all kinds of procedures to put in place, wouldn't you? All right, the pattern of it is, here's a strange particle, pretty clear. Let's get him oriented a little bit in the environment he's operating in. Let's get him accustomed to receiving some orders. Let's demonstrate to him even before that that you're interested in what problems he does have. Let's make sure that he has some contact with memory. And then let's just tackle affinity, reality, communication, knowingness, lookingness, emotingness, effortingness, thinkingness, symbolizingness, eatingness, and sexingness, as though they were barriers. Let's just tackle this. And on the most simple process possible, which is, of course, straight wire. And taking these various parts of the problem, we are, of course, taking him apart so that he can go back together again. Now, what's the trouble with pre-clear? Pre-clear's got the idea that he's got to be a super-organized organism of great complexity, which has microamps running to the right and microamps running to the left and microamps going this way and that way, and microvolts going some other direction, and machines sitting here, and tubes sitting there. And if you do this, then something else happens there, and then something else happens over there, and then something else happens there. And unless he can do all of these complex joinings and shuntings and so forth, he feels that he cannot live, because his idea of being able to live is staying in agreement with. If you wanted to define livingness to most preclears, they walked up, well, it would be the how do I stay in agreement with in order to continue to secure the good opinion of or prevent further bad opinion of myself? That's more or less what his goal is. Well, to hell with that goal. What's the trouble with the boy? He's been going in the wrong direction. The wrong direction is that you should run around and find everything and get everything to agree with you and you agree with everything and doesn't matter what it is and so on, and you make very sure that you don't dislike the wrong things and that you dislike the right things. And in other words, it's a sort of a slavery. Well, if there were anybody monitoring the society at large saying, this is now to be liked and this is now not to be liked, you see, there'd be some sense in it. At least everybody could go together. But as it is, it's just sort of a chaos. There isn't any monitoring influence to amount to anything. Religion is a monitoring influence. It's shotgunned all over the place. It's taken up an awful lot of odds and ends. It hasn't much to do with it. If anybody were securely in monitoring, for instance, anything like the Ten Commandments, just uniformly monitoring these things and making them stick all the way along the line, there'd be some kind of a standard. A fellow could say, well, Ten Commandments, I'm supposed to agree with these Ten Commandments and disagree with anybody who doesn't follow these Ten Commandments. Well, all right. I mean, you then have a system of morals. And then in the code of law, if we had something like the Code Napoleon, a fellow would say, well, now I'm supposed to agree with this code and I'm supposed to disagree with people who won't follow this code. And, you know, he could agree and disagree at will then, because he'd know what to disagree with and what to agree with in order to stay in agreement with. But let's put him up against this kind of a problem. We don't have a moral code. We don't have a Code Napoleon. We have something that's eight times removed from English common law, which wasn't anything to begin with. We have in the system of morals, thou shalt not dance, or something in one part of the country, in another part of the country, why the idea of abstaining from sexuality is thou must not be a homosexual. The terrific variations. Thou shalt not steal thy neighbor's wife or covet thy neighbor's wife or something like this. Why, just try and put that into practice in any square block in America. Nuh-uh. It isn't custom. You try to enforce, thou shalt not kill. Well, it's kind of silly. You better be more definite than that. You better be, thou shalt not kill thy fellow man or woman. And people could then agree with that and understand. But thou shalt not kill, that means thou shalt not eat. Think it over. Every time you eat, something had to die. Just open and shut. All right. If you had an easy moral code to follow, pretty clear, and an easy legal code, since justice is a very powerful factor in any case, why, he probably could go on and on and on and on without any real deterioration, without any particular unhappiness. Because even though the codes he had agreed to were themselves rather outrageous, they were at least definite. They provided a certainty in existence. Well, an individual who isn't living in a certain society, who is confronted continually by this chaotic uncertainty, where the state itself continually disobeys this law, thou shalt not kill, for instance. You know, they take a guy, and because he's killed somebody, they kill him. You know, the state, with capital punishment, is violating the Ten Commandments, left and right. What is laughingly called justice today is, actually, is getting poorer and poorer. It's to a point where nobody would dare go near a court. You ask most anybody around, you say, oh, why don't you sue him? Oh, no. They just got the idea very firmly embedded that if they ever get into an involvement in the line of law, why, they're just gone ducks, regardless of whether they're right or wrong. So it's one place they don't go. Well, if you're going to have a third dynamic operating, for heaven's sakes, you mean to tell me it can operate without a clear-cut justice? You mean to tell me it can operate where people cannot go into courts of law and plead their case and ask for redress for their wrongs? Well, if they haven't got that, you'd have to permit them to kill. You'd have to permit them to take old Bowser out of the bottom drawer of the bureau and go out and shoot the dog down. Either one thing or the other, man cannot live without justice. He just can't. You can't have a third dynamic without justice. So what's this all about? It means that the state, taxing everybody like mad, to give them justice doesn't give them justice. It means the church, which would normally be looked to furnish a moral code, doesn't give them a moral code. Education is supposed to give a guy advantages in life. And he goes down and he's told that geometry is the way you think. Geometry isn't the way you think. If any of you are going to educate anybody, you would teach him how to think, how to evaluate, how to make judgments on existence, how to apply practical knowledge to practical things in his own livingness. You wouldn't teach him hypochondriacal trigonometry or something. These terrific abstracts that they call education. Guy goes, well, I don't know, what? How long do they go to college now to get a doctorate in something of the sort? Till they're 36 or 42? Or it's getting up there. It's not up there yet. People, when they graduate from college, they're getting older and older because there's more and more subject matter being thrown at them, none of which has much practicality. So a person has a tendency, as he looks around, for the very essentials of the third dynamic, which would be to say, first, know-how, and second, the whole problem of optimum conduct. What is optimum conduct at this time and in this place? And what is justice here, and how can justice be obtained? If you don't answer any of those questions with a civilization, you have doomed that civilization to a tremendous amount of aberration. So there sits your preclear. He's been denied one, know-how. He's had a subject known as psychology, rushing around trying to certify and degree everybody on how many ohms of resistance a plate has to take to keep a rat from shacking up with a female rat. And this was supposed to take care of his mind, and it didn't take care of his mind. And he turns around from that, and he goes to the society at large. He runs on a certain set of values. He runs on these values, and all of a sudden he finds out nobody else is running on these values. You know, he's been lied to again. He turns around, and he gets into some sort of a fight with his fellow man, and he finds out that there is no judge anyplace who will render an impartial decision. He goes to court to find out whose garage it really was, or whose car really hit what car, and he finds himself dealing with the third section of the code on cruelty to automobile tires or something of the sort. It has nothing to do with it. A fellow going to court to sue is just as likely as not today to be pronounced guilty by the judge. You know, the judge sort of doesn't care about it. Somebody points out immediately and says, that's the plaintiff you just sentenced. And the judge says, oh, well, next case. You think I'm being extraordinarily harsh on justice? I'm not, because you get preclear after preclear, whose whole life has just been thrown into a tailspin simply by one contact with jurisprudence. So I don't overstress it. Now, here he is trying to maintain some kind of a domestic existence, not safeguarded at every hand. The law doesn't safeguard his domestic existence. Moral code doesn't safeguard it, and yet he's told that he should maintain a family. He can't, unless he's permitted some kind of justice and some kind of enforcement of morality. If he can't enforce morality, if he can't have any justice, in first place, when he got married, the amount of know-how there was on the essentials of marriage were practically zero. And if the guy can't have any of these things or enforce any of these things, how in the name of God can you ever expect him to stay in a familial atmosphere? He can't. So you get divorces, and your preclear's been divorced, and he's tried to get this way and go that way. What's he tried to do? He's tried to agree with this part of life, or agree with that part of life. And he's found it each time that it was in such a chaos he couldn't find out what to agree with. If you don't watch him, he will just sit there and turn this problem over in his mind ceaselessly. That's why you mustn't use techniques which are very arduously complex, because he'll just turn over into the solution to these third dynamic problems. What is his relationship to existence? The third dynamic problem finally collapsed and became circuits and became part of the first dynamic. He finds out that only he can live. He learns the standard lesson. Only he. He can get ahead only as long as he steps on everybody else and climbs over everybody else. And he natively doesn't want to do this. He feels this is kind of wrong. So even if he's able to do this and get ahead anyhow, he feels rather ashamed of himself. He's got the third dynamic staring him right in the face. Collapsed upon him. What you're actually processing as a preclear is a collapsed third dynamic. If you just want to make a general statement, if you just made that statement about the preclear, we're processing a third dynamic which has collapsed and has become, as circuits, part of the first dynamic. This guy we're processing is a sort of a colony. He actually should be sitting there as the third dynamic when you consider all the factors, but he isn't. He's the third dynamic pretending he's the first dynamic, because he has been rebuffed in his search for know-how. He's been betrayed in his search for, domestic calm, so forth, and morality. Again, he has searched and fallen back. He couldn't agree with anything. He's not been permitted to agree, and so all agreement has gone bad on this subject. He has searched for justice, and he has not found it. So he's lost. If these things are lost, and if all the things that are really valuable in life are this lost, well, then certainly he must be lost too. And he gets back there, who is he? That's his burning question. Who am I? Where am I? What am I doing here? He says, am I the court that sentenced me when I was the plaintiff? Am I my own wife? All the knowingness there is? He's sort of media, going to answer all these questions. Yes, I am just me sitting here on this little island, and I don't dare communicate with anything because I can't agree with anything, because there's nothing there to agree with after you've looked. Do I dare like anything? Nope. Sure can't, because if you start to like something, you find out it's running on an entirely different organization than yourself. So you better just fall back from that. And when it finally boils down, who can I communicate with? Me. Who can I like or dislike freely? Me. Who can I agree or disagree with freely? Me. If I try to do anything else, I will be stopped. Not necessarily by clean, clear-cut barricades, but by something much more insidious, tremendous confusion. I will be stopped from liking people and stopped from agreeing with people. I will be stopped from disliking people and stopped from disagreeing with people by areas of confusion, which are so broad and so deep that you could only get lost if you went into them. The only sure, certain thing to do, the only certainty I could find then, would be ARC right where I'm sitting, where I should be in the third dynamic. Where he should be in the third dynamic, he is in the first dynamic. If he goes arduously enough into religion, he will eventually even go on up to, and where there should have been an eighth dynamic, he will discover himself. In other words, he tried to reach for an eighth dynamic. He found such confusion, such an impossibility of communication, such an impossibility of affinity. God loves you all. That's why he's going to cut your throats out of vengeance. The standard confusion which exists on that subject today. So he's even tried to go up and look at the eighth dynamic, so he's pulled that back on himself, and you'll find him sitting there, all eight dynamics in a bundle, really. But the one you're really interested in is the fact that the third is in a bundle. Now, many people will tell you that the optimum way to separate out a pre-clear and the optimum thing to do for a pre-clear is simply to pull him out of all social contact, to make an antisocial being out of him, to break his socialness down in such a way that he can exist independently and alone. That's the finest way in the world to get an individual into a trap and keep him there. Here's a total sum of escape routes are all through the third dynamic. His tolerance of the third dynamic, its attitudes, likings, dislikings, agreements, disagreements, are such that he has to be able to tolerate all those viewpoints before he is actually free. Otherwise, he has fallen back from something as far as he's considering, you see. As long as he's fallen back from that thing, any forward progress he makes will make him go into that thing again. And he isn't going to go into that thing. We're talking on a philosophic level about processing now, aren't we? And yet, in essence, that is your pre-clear. He is somebody who has ventured and fallen and retreated. You better find out what he's retreated from. You could be very specific. You could get all the significances of all the things he has retreated from if you wanted to. It's not necessary. You can say, in essence, he's retreated from the dynamics. And it gives you all the dynamics. And what he has left of all these dynamics are only those things which can manifest as those dynamics in himself. So he's sitting there, the only one, all by himself, all dynamics right there. His certainties on these dynamics, very poor. Now, an auditor could go out along the line some way or another. An auditor could actually put color to his processing this way. You know, he could color his processing in such a way as to convince his pre-clear that the third dynamic is not tolerable. See, he could persuade him one way or the other by selection of processes run to fall away from and have nothing more to do with mother, father, the family, so forth. Just his general attitude toward these things. He could keep sort of intimating, you know, that these things aren't tolerable. And what do you know? His pre-clear get worse. Just the auditor attitude. About the only real dangerous attitude an auditor could have would be that attitude which constantly kept the pre-clear within himself, bunched up into one lump. And not venturing. The pre-clear's freedom depends upon that venturousness. So we'd find a direction of process there where an individual, as an auditor, could actually try to communicate with somebody else the fact that the third dynamic is intolerable and that he shouldn't have anything to do with it. See, an auditor could do that and actually stop a lot of the pre-clear's progress. On the other hand, the auditor, by persuading the pre-clear that the third dynamic would be tolerable, also defeats his purpose. So here we have evaluation. He could color his processing so as to convince the pre-clear the third dynamic was not tenable. And he could color his processing so as to convince the pre-clear that the third dynamic was tenable. And The first one, the pre-clear would accept that it wasn't tenable. He knows that already. And the auditor tried to color his processing in such a way as to convince the pre-clear that it was tenable and really Mama didn't mean all those things and so forth. Why, he's doing the very positive line that got the pre-clear there in the first place. Everybody kept coming around and saying, lead out, put your confidence out there someplace, lead out further, and really it isn't so bad, and you just think it's bad, but it's just your idea of it, and so on. Pre-clear doesn't buy this at all. So the auditor's best attitude and best role and best processes are simply those which let the pre-clear find out for himself that the third dynamic is tenable. If you could recreate a social mind there just by running processes so that the pre-clear reached out in the third dynamic, you would have accomplished wonders in processing. You certainly would have gotten the guy exteriorized, by the way, just in the process of doing this. It's quite remarkable. Now, the third dynamic, of course, is never more manifest than in the departments of ARC. You see, although an individual could exist theoretically as the only one and never communicate with anything and so forth, he could exist theoretically this way. Actually, he has to have ARC even to be in communication internally. But that's a very small ARC, isn't it? So as to get a broader ARC, you have to, of course, reach out to the wider dynamics. You certainly have to reach through the third dynamic. The trouble with an individual is not that he has been in contact with people, but that he has begun to consider that contact with people is damaging. It isn't contact with people. Now you get a whole group of people, each one of whom considers that contact with people is damaging, and you get a big area of confusion, believe me. I'm sure the modern court believes that contact with the prisoners and the plaintiffs and so forth believes implicitly, see, the court, after all, is merely a mirror of what goes on, believes implicitly that the contact with these people is very damaging to the court. I'm sure a court considers that its line of business is very upsetting to the court. You look at the face on any judge you happen to have run into lately, and you will see definitely that he is not enjoying his work. Whereas, matter of fact, I would hate to have to confront with any suit I ever brought forth one of these judges with this cautious look about him. I'd like a nice, round-faced, pleasant, preferably a little overweight sort of judge that sat there and wasn't anxious about anything. You know, he possibly might bring himself to a verdict based on the evidence instead of his ulcers. Now, your church today, they did too much of a good thing about 100 years ago, you know. They damned everybody to hell and everybody went. Now they wonder where their congregations are. The church had actually nothing to offer but reproof, which is trying to get rid of your congregation. They must have believed that contact with God was damaging, otherwise they wouldn't have made it so arduous. And we get over into know-how. Evidently, the most deadly thing in modern society would be some knowingness, because you come up with knowing something in a university and they flunk you. That's right. It's as much as a student's life is worth to get really comprehensive about his subject. Well, it's all right for him to memorize the formulas. It's all right for him to be able to work the problems by rote. But if he were ever daffy enough to come into class with some original observations on botanomy or something, he would find himself sacked, but promptly. I was very amused one time to find a fellow who was majoring in mathematics very early in his career had been dismissed from the mathematics department. Noting the mathematics department was going to let him take mathematics again. What had he done? He had eliminated three steps out of an essential equation. He found out they weren't necessary, and he had no idea why everybody kept putting them in there, and he pointed it out to the professor, and this went to the chair, and that was the end of that. I know this because I published an article on it in the university paper. Math department took him back right away, the power of the press. The main thing that you find is that this tremendous anxiety about being damaged, on the third dynamic, it's got a big area of confusion by which everybody tries to stay out of it one way or the other. The actuality is that the individual who is tremendously sociable is very, very well. Very sociable people are very well people. But what do I mean by very sociable? I don't mean the people who go around propitiating to the degree that they sort of ease in and apologetically and so forth. I mean these very overt sociable people. There are a bunch of people talking around, and they're talking about the slave question or some other modern subject. And this fellow says, well, I disagree with it very heartily because of so-and-so. And the other guy says, well, now, wait a minute. You don't know what you're talking about. And he said, well, the hell I don't. So-and-so. And you find, oddly enough, everybody likes this guy. You'd say, well, nobody could act like that in public, you know, disagree overtly with people and everything. And nobody'd like him, obviously. That's a very funny thing. Everybody does like him. He's free. He's a guy, he's in social contact. His ARC is very good all the way around the line. Mostly, this demonstrates its fact in the fact that he's reasonable. He can see both sides of things and so forth. He isn't ornery, particularly, just for the sake of being ornery. Now, we say criminality is antisocialness. And sure, that it is. And that's all it is. And when an individual has been asked to fall back on the first dynamic, when he's asked to fall back a lot further, he gets into that band known as criminality. Never think that a criminal is well off. He has fallen too far away from the third dynamic. Now, just for our purposes as auditors in addressing pre-clears, we have the handiest mechanism in the world. How far has this individual fallen away from a good third dynamic? As a single test. If you said to this person, why, he's a long way from it. You know that he's going to be a long time in processing. He's going to take you a lot more time. He's going to be much more upsetting to you as an auditor because he's just gone so far from this basis. You know, tremendously long communication lags. You ask him what he could disagree with, and 5 hours later he gives you the answer. Something on this order. But, of course, that isn't up to you to judge him particularly since you're the boy who's remedying his line. And so we remedy him right on up the lines. So what are our procedures? Now, I started this half-hour lecture here with just this. I said these are the procedures and so forth. And then I didn't give you a bunch of auditing commands, did I? Well, unless you can audit sentiently, unless you can audit and know where you're trying to put this pre-clear, unless you have some philosophy underlying what you yourself are trying to do, you're just sitting there uttering a string of words. And the funny part of it is you'd get there anyhow. That's the magic of Scientology. But you'd get there a lot longer, and you occasionally miss. You wonder how you miss. Well, we're trying to make this guy social. And if we make him social, then we can make him entirely independent and free. That's all there is to it. The way out is through, and the third dynamic is the biggest bar on that way out to most of the pre-clears that you're going to process. So the way out of it is through. Tolerance, ARC, third dynamic. If you can reestablish this with your pre-clear, you've done it. And that is actually the philosophy back of auditing. It's very simple, isn't it?